Hey folks, welcome to the podcast we call Long Shots. And I have with me my usual collaborator, Mr. Sharad Tupran. Hey Sharad, I have replaced the identifier I placed with you. You're no longer the usual suspect. You are a collaborator now. How are you, man?
I'm very well. And have you noticed that we did a bunch of fintech and insurtech kind of businesses, and now in the last couple of times we've gone into slightly more exciting, eclectic verticals, from brands to sort of today we are going into like the fashion world. Last time we went into sort of a design and AI kind of a play. So it's we're expanding our conversation universe.
Absolutely. No, so that with that, I would like to welcome Mr. Abhishek Sharma, COO of Fashionza. And Abhishek, probably being an ops guy, I don't know how much you characterize Fashionza with the term eclectic. Welcome to the show. And you know, to start off, we do know that obviously you are you come from a fairly extensive background before Fashionza. You were part of BharatPay. You were part of LimeRoad. Probably LimeRoad was your earliest foray into fashion as a vertical. You also spent some time at Flipkart, IIT Delhi, BTech, CS. Just want to kind of, you know, kick off the show by asking you that yourself, Pawan and Jamil, obviously, who are all part of the founding team, how do you guys like run into each other and start what you have started?
Yeah, I think thanks, Nikhil and Sharad. Thanks for the introduction and thanks for having me. And I just said, long story. I think the way me, Pawan and Jamil started this company, but to keep you short, so Pawan and I were in the same college at IIT Delhi, at same hostel. Mm. And we knew each other from so long. That is like back in 2008, we know each other. And I and Pawan worked together also with this startup, which his name is Curify, which is a healthcare startup. So I was there also, so we got a chance to work with before starting Fashionza together. And with Jamil, me and Jamil were part of the founding team member at LimeRoad, and we were good friends there. And we never thought like we'll start a company together, but I think somehow when Fashionza or fashion space came in my mind with my Pawan discussion, I think Jamil was the first person who I thought like I should bring him as a co-founder. So this is how we ended up working together. The interesting journey, and I think you mentioned that the space, the things you are coming with. I think as a fashion company, or I think B2B commerce fashion company, we touch upon so many things, which is actually pretty exciting. It's not an operation part. It's so many things we are touching upon, like how to understand how the brands works, how design works, and AI also comes into that, and then definitely operation and technology, which is our forte.
Interesting. So obviously, like, you guys have a SaaS-based manufacturing marketplace of sorts, catering to various brands in the domain of fashion and apparel. You know, would love to first understand, as a layman, if I'm a brand and I have to procure or source placement of the order or the design phase all the way till fulfillment, right? What are the various, you know, pieces within the value chain which you see?
So I think before jumping into this question, I would like to give a brief idea about our business model to the audience and the customer segments we work with. So we are a B2B platform or marketplace platform where we work with the brands and help them in terms of the design to delivery solution. So primarily their backend part, the frontend part, the selling it to the customer, retail, they manage that. And our belief is that brands should primarily focus on user side, customer side, telling them a story, creating a collection and creating a story to sell those collections using marketing and branding. The rest of the things should be managed by us, people like us, where we help them in terms of the product they want to or they should procure or they want to procure. So we, how we do it, basically, we have a network of factories across India and Bangladesh, where we partner with the factories, we book their line, we control their supply chain in terms of the fabric and the raw material also. And then with those network of factory, we go to the brands and give and get the orders. And there are two ways we get the orders from the brand. One of the ways basically brands give their own design, and that our responsibility is basically to get manufacture those designs to one of the best factory or best supplier we have it in our network. And we have an entire process for that, which I'll come to and discuss that in detail later. The other way is basically we provide our design with the intelligence, like this is the design which is going to be sell because of the XYZ reason. Because this design is going to be is a trend, this fabric is a trend, it's going to be in trend. It's already selling on the top of the brands online on Shein, on Zara. So those are the intelligence we provide, and that's one of the reasons brands procure or select our design also.
Right.
So these are the two business or sales strategy we use it. And once brands select the design or brands give their own design, the process of the manufacturing is there, and where actually most of that our manufacturer partner come into the picture along with our operation team. And if I break into the entire process, the process is basically very high level. It's like a very long lead cycle process.
Right.
So it looks like very easy that I'm wearing the t-shirt. And as a layman, I think like, oh, okay, since it's a t-shirt only, I don't think so. It's like it should take only like 1 or 2 days to make it. But it's like a long lead cycle time. So for a t-shirt, like basic t-shirt like this, which I'm wearing, it also takes like 90 days to 120 days time from order to delivery, which is a long lead cycle. And during the process, there are lots of steps and approval. And there's lots of stakeholder are there, which actually impacts the processes of the production cycle also. And that's where we come into the picture. So what we did, we digitized the entire supply chain and all the processes of getting this from order to actual delivery. There's everything you can track it online on our platform. And that's how our value comes in. I think the offering of the, not only offering, but I think the value of the space which you build is coming to the picture.
Yeah.
So for example, just completing that. I think, for example, this feature, once I got the order, the first step is basically to figure out where the fabric come from, what kind of fabric it come from, whether the fabric will have the same quality. So one is that process is completed, then sampling starts. And sampling, again, is not like one sampling, it's like 2-3 sampling. One is like a fit sample, and once sampling is done, then and the final approval is come, then the bulk production happens. And after bulk production, then there's an inspection process, which also we do it and manage it, then happen, and then delivery part comes to the picture. So if just I break it down the long lead cycle, it starts from fabric to the final inspection, and there are multiple steps in between.
So the sampling, approval process, everything, all the heavy lifting you are doing?
Absolutely, yeah.
On the sort of break it down, there's a demand side and there's a supply side. On the demand side is obviously the fashion houses and the buying houses. So for them, obviously the pitch is end-to-end digital framework. There is traceability, which I suspect was not something that was there about 10 years back or 15 years back, where you could get real-time traceability as such. What else is there? Is customer support a big piece of it? Because historically, I mean, this is a sector, when you look at old traditional businesses and you're looking at overseas, be it from language-related, cultural differences to general, customer support has been a bit of a challenge. Is that an area of focus as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the major value proposition when we go to the brand is, as you rightly mentioned, is the transparency and traceability using our software. The second value proposition is take an end-to-end responsibility of delivery, unlikely to any agent or any offline player. And the third thing is basically we are customer first. And we don't call it a customer support, we call it like a customer experience. And not only include the communication, but the entire thing, whenever any issue or failure happens from our side or the supply side, we make sure that it's getting rectified and we are responsible to the customers. And most of the time in our industry, and one of the reasons we started in this business, because we realized that it's so much unorganized and so much unfragmented and NPS is so low. So when we studied the brand, we talked to so many brands and everyone said that our experience with the supplier is so low because most of the time issue happens, suppliers stop picking their call. And that's one of the things actually you also mentioned that. So because of those reasons, we started, and now we say that when we go and pitch to the brand and say that as a customer first company, we give you a best in class customer experience, and forget like we not pick the phone. I think we'll give you a solution whether it's on our own cost or not. So that is something we come and go pitch to the customers.
And from actual delivery, the final step is sort of the, you know, when it's in freight or in, which takes a, like you rightly said, could take a month or 2 months. So there is a significant piece of the puzzle where time where it's actually in C it's being managed by shippers. Do you sort of have visibility, or do you sort of, or is that something like freight forwarders will take care of in terms of offering that intel to your ultimate buyer?
Yeah, so I think end of the day, brand matters. That when they give the order to us, they always see Freshinja as a one partner where they rely on everything to us. Like the same way you order on Flipkart and supplier fucks up the order, maybe supplier issues the order. You always change the Flipkart only. The same way brand also relies that anything related to delivery or anything related to production, they come to us only. For that matter, we actually control or manage the freight forwarder part also. So we have our own logistic team where we have our third-party partners, 3PL partners, we partner with them, and we put our integration on that in terms of visibility, as well as we do a controlling also, like proper planning, scheduling, so that everything is get on time. Obviously, it's like a high operation business issue happens, and because of the pandemic in last 2 years, it was very high thing, and the logistic or that freight is like definitely a big challenge. But I think we always try to give a best customer experience and visibility on that.
And is there like a lot of, because like when you mentioned that when post order placement, there is obviously a lot of things happening at the back end before the shipping event kicks off. And for those events, you guys are obviously operationally involved in that. And that probably requires a fair amount of interaction or interface with the brand, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how is that process digitized?
Yeah. So I think let's talk about how it was happening before Freshinja thing. So I'll give you one example. I think I have two different cases where brands are directly working with the supplier or brands are working with the players like us in an offline offline player like us. So let's take an example of where brands are directly working with the supplier, manufacturer, and they place an order. I think the brand has one very big team, which they call it a buying sourcing team or merchandising team, who's there. Their job is basically to do a follow-up with the supplier, and they don't expect supplier to give update proactively. So all they need to do is like a follow-up over the call or the email every day. And I spoke to one of the merchandiser in initial days, and he mentioned that I do 100 calls to my 5 suppliers every day. So this was a journey actually. Then that's like really, I was so surprised that it's so inefficient the way how it is working upon that. So definitely what we actually did it, I think we reduced all the calls they are doing the supplier, and what we have provided the dashboard where they can track it. It's like a track it, like as simple as like how you track your order on Flipkart. Right. So once you place an order on Flipkart, you get to know that your order is confirmed, packed, shipped, out for delivery and delivered. The same tracking we give it on our portal also. Your order is confirmed, fabric is procured, fabric is approved, inspected, approved, sampling done, sampling approved. All the tracking we give it on our player. And obviously there's a troubleshooting is required. We have a features for that. We have a chat feature for that. They can communicate to us as well as the supplier directly. And they can do troubleshooting also. And on top of that, we give a proactive communication to the brands or the respective POC of the brand about the status update of their order, weekly update or the monthly updates kind of thing, which is, I think, we digitize entirely.
I mean, on the brand side, I think I understand, but I'm also a bit curious to understand from a manufacturer's point of view.
Absolutely. So this is something IP, I would say that, and that's one of the things which we took some time to build it and take some time.
Yeah.
What we did is we digitized the entire production floor.
Right.
So whatever happening, and when I say digitize, basically we put a small software on a supplier or on the factory itself,
right,
and with the various steps of the production. And it's like it's a tablet-based software. We are actually, or the mobile app as well, where factory manager as well as the workers or the supervisor of the factory are using it. The simple example that whenever every factory fabric is coming into the factory, they have to enter that fabric is in-house in our app.
Right.
So that is something we are getting a visibility. And obviously, it looks very easy when I'm saying it, but it's not very easy. We need to train. We need to, and not only train, we need to control that whether things are happening correctly or not. For that, we have our own audit team, on-ground team who are managing that process are getting followed by the supplier.
Right. Understood.
It's like a very parallel, as I give you a very simple word, I think how Flipkart or Amazon sellers are updating in our order management system, the same thing we have deployed. But since our order management cycle is much longer than what Flipkart or Amazon has, it's like a little complex problem. And the way we approach it, like, it's a little different.
And what is the sort of business logic that you guys use to map a particular buyer with the manufacturer, right? I mean, let's say, I mean, there are a bunch of factories and manufacturers in India who can do very well cotton, let's say. I'm just giving cotton probably widely sourced, right? So which how do you do that mapping? Like, what is the business logic? Is it sort of engineered to looking at efficiency, looking at, or is there a rating split? Like, how does that mapping happen?
And this, I think, again, I would say is one of the IP, and I cannot disclose. I don't want to disclose in the, like, a very detailed manner. I give you the overview so that you get a sense of that. But as a marketplace company, this is one of the key things you have to solve it. And we also took some time to solve this. And every supplier, I think, to give you an example, like, the complexity of this, there's a one supplier is actually making one T-shirt as a product. If you expect him to do a shirt or maybe like a jeans, it's very, very difficult. It's, I think, quite impossible in the world. So the way we approach it, I think we have a proper... So when we onboard a supplier, we actually collect that 40 to 50 data points and create a supplier profile and do the rating, et cetera, et cetera. But I think very simple way in a matching algorithm, we check three things. The capability of the supplier, the costing of the supplier, and the capacity available to the supplier at that point of time. Mm-hmm. And that is entirely digitized. So when I say capability, I think you understand whether the supplier, so any order, whether the order comes, you always check whether the supplier can do or not.
Mm-hmm.
Costing is whether the supplier can do it that pricing or not. And that's the interesting thing when I say pricing, because you see same product with the big factory where the overheads are very high. It can be cost a lot, while you go to the small and medium-sized manufacturing, which is our forte, the cost is so less. Mm-hmm. So actually, we always try to optimize that as well. And the third thing, capacity available. And given that we have all digitized that production floor, we have a real-time capacity available of the supplier so that we know that the supplier can do it. It's not like that supplier is taking an order and then machines or labors are not available and orders are getting delayed because of that.
Well, you know, like when you were earlier mentioning that you have kind of a real-time tracking in terms of when the stock is coming in, et cetera, at the factory level or at the unit level. But what about design? I mean, on the design end, what kind of interfaces there, which, you know, allows suppliers to get the inputs from the brand end. That's part one. Part two is when you mentioned that, when we were going on your platform, we saw that, you know, there are some basically trending designs which are shown, right? Something trending on Instagram, something trending. Is that a function of purely social media analytics in terms of what is trending, what's not, or it's also a function of what your suppliers can preferably fulfill or they have been fulfilling? I mean, is that also part of the mix?
This is a pretty new in terms of offering. Our offering when we started is the primary three things which I mentioned is like visibility and transparency and then delivery, end-to-end delivery and that customer experience or communication. Design is something new and we're still doing a mix of that. But I think some of the things which are really working for us, basically predicting a trends and the way we do it basically, and you are right, actually, we have our own AI platform where we go and scrap the data from the social media or some of the other top websites. Or at the same time, we have our own design team in various locations of the world, where they get fed in the inputs from the offline pair also.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we collect all the trends in form of the fabric, print, and shape, which is going to work or which is going to trending, is something we offer to our brand also. And I think that's an interesting thing, what we are doing, and that's also changing a lot. Now, in the world of fast fashion, the trends are almost like a real-time earlier too. Like, it used to be like Paris fashion work is happening this year, and the trend is going to become, that trend is going to become after 2 years. Now, I was talking to someone yesterday in one of my brand meeting, and he mentioned that Justin Bieber's wife is wearing this yesterday, and now brands are asking for this delivery.
Right.
But those things actually already started happening, and we also wanted to be like as close to as the trend or the customer need. So that's why we call it more like a demand-driven supply chain rather than a more long supply chain, and that's we're trying to build it, and we already got a success on that.
You know, I'm sort of switching gears into more some macro factors. One is like, you know, from an Indian perspective, I mean, I noticed that your ecosystem of manufacturers actually includes Bangladesh and China and Vietnam as well. So, I mean, that 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 seems very interesting because for an Indian startup, or I mean startup or mid-sized company, whichever way you want to categorize, but you know, because there is a lot of commentary coming out, right? Like sort of favorable tariff regimes in Vietnam and Bangladesh, sort of textile manufacturing is sort of on the up there. And is that sort of the way to protect, to hedge yourself, to sort of tackle and open offices or open solutions and tie up relationships with manufacturers in all these economies where textile is of importance? I mean, much like India.
Yeah, there are two ways to answer this question. I think one of the ways basically, and first of all, we are still heavy on India and Bangladesh. Obviously, other places we tried, and but the focus is always India and Bangladesh. And one of the reasons we started other geography for more time, basically, brand, as a brand, they want to see as a one-stop sourcing solution. Mm-hmm. And when you say one-stop sourcing solution, every country has its own capability and capacity. For example, Bangladesh is very good for a basic product at very high volume. When it comes to India, it's very definitely is a design-driven and very work artisan is something which India is like excellent to. China is very different for the like a sportswear or activewear category or the man-made fabric. For that reason, we have to expand. But I think still focus is basically at the same time that we also realize that there's lots of sentiment is going out of China. The people are looking for China plus one alternate option of the China in terms of manufacturing. And given that we are based in India and Bangladesh next to us, we focus only these are two countries involved. Now we are focusing upon how we build the new capability which India is not known for. Mm-hmm. So that is something which is really working out for us. And the way we have, again, that approach is always look for or give up a solution to the brand, which actually brands are looked for, but like try to restrict where your strength is. So India and Bangladesh is definitely something we are going deep.
Is there like a specific segment within brands which is like your focus area, in the sense that like when you look at very large names, they already have fairly level, you know, like I would say entrenched relationships with sourcing partners. Sourcing partners also treat them preferentially for various reasons, etc.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to break into that, right? I mean, how do you look at that part of the problem? Or is it like you mainly focus more on, you know, online first brands or more boutique-y type mid-market size names? How do you view that?
That's an interesting journey. I think last 3 years, I think I'm quite amazed at how the journey also changed. And to give you that some sense, we started with the focus of D2C brands, online first brands for some of the small size brands, because we are the VGC, the value proposition is very high.
Yeah.
And after starting a couple of months, we started getting a query from Target, Walmart, and so Zara's of the world also. In fact, first, within a 1.5 year of starting, we onboarded Inditex, which is like Zara parent company.
Right.
So to give you some idea, I think we also realized that, okay, Inditex is like a very established player. Zara is obviously sold their supply chain and why they need us. But one thing we realized that I think they always look for a new supplier for two reasons.
Mm.
They always want to have something new in their product portfolio, maybe in form of design, maybe in form of fabric. So that is something. And second, they always want to optimize the cost of the sourcing.
Right.
So those are the things which actually really helping us for big brands also. To give you some sense, we work with Pull & Bear, which is a sister company in Inditex Group. We work with Mango. We work with in US, we work with Forever 21. Mm. So these are like the largest.
Yeah.
In India, we work with Beavkoof. We work with Adit Birla. We work with Reliance. I just saw many big names also. Mm. But I think that if you ask me, I think we have a very strong value proposition. It's still that online first or the mid segment.
Right.
For enterprise segment also. So for those segments, the mid segment, we become their preferred supplier or like only supplier sometime.
Yeah.
But I think with the big brand, we are like one of the supplier, not the very big one. But I think since the volumes are high and we also get a very good value by creating our... for our suppliers, I think we work with them also.
So is supply discovery also a challenge for even large guys?
I would say that product discovery, not a supply discovery. So for example, if they're looking for, in fact, I was in Spain and talking to Mango and they look for this kind of fabric, right? Mm-hmm. I think for get that fabric, I think either they choose their existing supplier to do 6 months or 5 months of R&D and build that, or is that they find the supplier who already doing that.
Right.
So in that way, I think it's definitely a challenge. And it's a big value proposition also.
How do you, interesting, how do you sort of view you know, when we think about textile manufacturing, I mean, the first image that comes to our mind is big factories with massive assembly lines and sort of automation, right? Like, so with the threat of, you know, automation and robotics, like, how do you see that impact your business? And there are two nuances to it. One is, obviously, I mean, from a social and political factor, I mean, it's on second largest employer in India, at least, right? I mean, it's a big industry. How do you sort of tackle when you want to digitize to a level such that, you know, it can be automated so much that there is a surplus requirement in surplus labor? Second is, when you look at these companies which are based out of the Western world, US, Spain, or whichever, I mean, one of the advantages that India, Vietnam, Bangladesh historically have offered is low-cost arbitrage, right, on the labor side. Robotics and automation also sort of somewhat addresses those as well. Sort of, you know, there is a play that it can be moved in now. So how do you see this play out in the next, let's say, 10, 12 years? And is it a net positive, or how do you sort of view it?
Yeah, a couple of points there, I think. So first of all, it's like a highly human dependent industry. And even if you automate or some of the things, it's very difficult to replace or remove the people who are actually doing the work. And some of the work, like I think stitching, some of the work like putting a value addition in terms of that the handwork and all those things. And sometimes the things which you are doing it's very, very difficult. Even for the big factories like Shai's or like Gokuldas of the world, is very, very difficult for that. And they are like still have a huge labor, and which I see is a very good thing for India, because it's actually constitute like a second largest employment industry for India and most of the countries also, in Bangladesh and Egypt as well. And I don't think so. It makes sense to replace them. Obviously, this industry is so old and so less digitization happens. There's so much to do before automating the manufacturing part. I think the simple example I give you, whenever a requirement comes, the requirement always comes like this much, like I think like 100 of pages of the files, and why people are not digitized that. And I think those files actually transform, like copied in 3 ways, and every floor of the factory has that file and that transform from here to here. And the chances of getting a mistake because of the file, because one manual error, or because I got lost on the one misplace on the page, is so much. So my sense is, I think there's so much to do in terms of that technology. And rather than doing automation, which is like a next world problem, I wish to that. I think there's so much which required, because it's like a hardly anything happened in this space, textile space. Coming back to the point, I think obviously the big factories are having a big setup and big infra in terms of technology. They have a SAP, they have Oracle, where they actually do have most of the production. But I think I was also getting a surprise when actually I entered into this business. I think most of the production, in fact, 80% of the production happens in small and medium-sized factory, which is like 50 machines or to 200 machines, or maybe like a 100 to 200 people team, where owners are only responsible for that. And for those people, thinking for investment of any technology like SAP and Oracle is quite impossible. And they need a very light touch solution where they can digitize rather than automating the things in their world, in their life.
Maybe we can like just touch upon the business model or the revenue model here. Is it like who are your core customers? Are they the sourcing partners, or are they the brands? And does your revenue model kind of work like in a typical e-commerce kind of a fashion on a transaction per basis?
Yeah, I think in terms of core customer, we have like 2-3 personas, and I think all the persona fits so like with the end brand. Whether you call it a brand, whether you call it a retailer, right. So people like Macy's, H&M, Zara, then Bayoko of the world in India, Clovia, these are the customer. People who are selling on Myntra is private label, Flipkart private label, we are already customer, and they give the order as a primary party to us. So they we got a PO or the order from there in our name, and we subcontract the order and we make a take rate in between.
Right.
So that's a take rate kind of business. Yeah.
Understood. So I mean, is it right to characterize it's like a buyer-led platform?
I think business model point of view, it's a buy-led model. But I think operation point of view, the way we see it is like it's a supply first company.
Right.
So if you have a good supplier, you have an infinite demand, and big. And finding a good supplier or making a good supplier is very, very difficult. So for actually what we build internally say that for there's an infinite demand for the right supply.
Right.
And we see, because if you deliver, if you give the transparency, if you become a preferred partner, there's no reason the brands are shifting from you.
And I guess for the suppliers, the biggest, like in purely financial terms, if you were to see, obviously there is a efficiency and operating leverage play that comes in. But from a supplier standpoint, the play here is that, look, we are giving you some sort of a institutional buyback assurance, right?
One way or the other.
Yeah, I think two, three things, I think. So first of all, we give you the demand, new demand, which actually you can improve their capacity utilization, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, since we are there, we make sure that your payments and assurity is there. And third, we help in terms of the working capital also by providing third-party financing to our network and BSC partner, et cetera. So that is something.
But like, do you like take stock through your books or no? It's like a direct...
It's a bill to ship to where we're actually... PO gets to us, but I think stock always goes through from supplier to brand directly. Right. Yeah, so we don't keep the stocks in our business.
Hold inventory there. Understood.
It's just it's interesting, you said working capital, because that's what I wanted to come to next. I mean, you guys have raised a bunch of capital, right? And from blue chip names, mix of equity and debt. Obviously, you know, you touched upon working capital, and this sort of industry has those working capital challenges. There's a big lag between collections and payments, and is that sort of a very intuitive growth lever to sort of not just help manufacturers get demand, but also sort of offer them financing, value-added solutions to smoothen out their operations? Is that an angle that you think is worthwhile to sort of explore and go towards?
That's an interesting thing, actually. I still debate on this and discuss that. In fact, our first year of our operation, we always start this like a blessed. Let's not get into the financing part of the supplier and just give us like as a purely marketplace transaction where they manage the payment terms, what brands are asking for there. When we saw the issues that, and I think and the reason we saw the issues because we work with the most of the small and medium-sized factories where they don't have access of the capital easily. Mm-hmm. Whereas access of capital, they don't have a bank line, they don't know how to go to the bank, even there's so much incentive as government is providing, they don't know how to do that. So I think for that reason, and at the same time, so they are coming to us for that. So they say that my order is getting, that I'm not able to do the order on time because I was not able to procure the fabric. And if you give the money, I can procure the fabric and do the order. Or maybe give me some advance so that I can manage the labor payment, et cetera, et cetera. So one thing we realize in doing that, I think obviously it's a call. Someone has to take it, how effectively you have to do it. But one thing which really worked that when we started giving this kind of support, with obviously you have to be like very disciplined on that. We realize that the quality and the delivery improves. Not only quality and delivery improves, but I think supplier becomes loyal to you also. Mm-hmm. They always see you as a trusted partner and work as what we say that to them. So that's one of the things which we realized and we started working upon that. And I think as you have my sense and our view is basically our thesis is around that. Once you have these things, like supplier is loyal and you can control the quality and product, I think you can remove the angle of working capital from that supplier.
But like,
we started doing it already.
I mean, interesting you said that, and lending is something which fascinates both of us collectively. Is that, do you want to become like a tech-enabled DSA of sorts for a financial partner, or do you want to do this from your own books at some point in time?
We are doing both mix. In future, I don't want to do any of these. Frankly,
you don't want to do?
I really want to do a commerce part, which
right.
is design and production.
Right.
But I think we are doing it. We have to do it, and we'll have to do it. So now we have to solve it out the right way of doing it. And I think I don't want to comment because I'm still figuring out what the right way of doing it.
I'm sure you even your existing VCs probably call you and say, "Guys, let's make a lending book. Guys, let's start lending," because VCs also love that lending play, right?
Absolutely. Why don't you buy the NBFC license? Why don't you apply for the NBFC license? Yeah. Those are the things which come to my mind also. Yeah. And I think there are some success stories around that. But I think those success stories in the different vertical where I think the people are in the commodity business, where absolutely the capital value is so high, where in our business, the fact is so fragmented. First of all, and the value proposition for both brand and supplier is so much high. So I think first we want to crack into that. Obviously, we need to, and we have money and we are doing that. But I think our core focus to solve what we are doing it first and enable some of the things as an ecosystem, what we are enabled so far. But I think what we believe is that design to delivery is something we need to nail it down to next level.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, this is a very fascinating chat, and I mean, obviously, we spoke briefly about the investor ecosystem. You know, would love to get your sense on how your journey was, in the sense that obviously you raised a bunch of money between 2020 and 2022, 23. Meanwhile, another company, which I mean, from an optical standpoint, looks similar to what you guys are doing. Yeah. It got a lot of bad rap within the investor ecosystem as well. So did it feed into your efforts, or you were, or is it something that you guys are different? You were doing things very differently. The model is not similar. And that message obviously resonated, and hence you got the success that you got.
Yeah, I think we first of all, at the DNA level, we are very different. I think other people, I'm not sure, I don't want to, which people you were talking about, but I think whatever the people...
There's only one name, Abhishek. But it's okay.
Yeah, so when I think what are the people are trying to build, they are trying to build another or better buying house or another offline player, yeah, which we are not. I think you'll realize that the kind of technology things we are doing it and the way. And if you see the background of us as well as the other people thing, you realize the difference in that. Hmm. I come from hardcore technology and product background. And the reason we started, we want to bring efficiency rather than doing just a business thing. Right. And coming back to the capital thing, obviously that was last 2 years was definitely, in 21, 22 was a great time, and we were lucky, and we did not have a requirement that time, but people came to us and we raised it. And now it's one thing we really like about that. We did not, in this market, we are not worrying about the capital. We already have a good capital in the market. Now we are trying to, now we are using that capital, or in thinking of using that capital for international expansion. And one of the reason I am sitting in US and moved to the US and spending time for international business for that only. So I say that I think it's a good time we raised the money. Now we are utilizing that money for the good purpose, for the good growth of the company. And I think that's working well for us.
No, great. This has been a very exciting chat, and loved the ops-oriented perspective you gave into your business. We wish you all the best. Obviously, we'll be, you know, kind of cheering for you guys and watching out for further and bigger successful milestones. Thank you so much, Abhishek, for your time. This is Nikhil Arora, and I have with me Sharad Tupran, signing off.